Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. You know, back in the 1800s and into the early 1900s, the cattle industry was big in Florida, but it was different from the big ranges and ranches of the Midwest and the West. Cattle were mostly left to run wild in the pine woods and scrub and were periodically rounded up by cowboys, or cow hunters as they called themselves, who were probably, I'm guessing, tougher and meaner than most Texas cowboys. During the Spanish-American War, they sold cattle to both sides in exchange for Spanish gold coins that actually became, for decades, the currency of much of Central Florida, if you can imagine that. So these people were hardy, independent, Scotch-Irish, mostly poor folks who came down from Georgia and Alabama in search of a life far from civilization. And they came to be called crackers, and their legacy still barely survives today, but their memory lives on among multi-generational Floridians, such as me, and especially those close to the land and farming. So in 1995, an amazing event was organized. It was called the First Great Florida Cattle Drive. It ran for 70 miles through the center of Florida as a kind of historical reenactment involving lots of people on horseback and lots of cattle. And another one like it took place about 11 years later in 2006. And a third Great Florida Cattle Drive is coming up in January 2016. My guest today is Doyle Connor Jr., who's the trail boss of the first two drives in 1995 and 2006, and also of the upcoming one in January. Doyle is the son of Doyle Connor Sr., who's a longtime commissioner of agriculture in Florida, and he's from a family that's very much a part of old Florida history. Welcome, Doyle.
Well, thank you, sir. Pleasure to be with you.
Thanks for being on. So why don't you just plunge in and tell us about the first two cattle drives 10 years ago and then, oh gosh, 20 years ago.
Well, first off, the reason we did it in 95 was that was Florida's sesquicentennial year. It was our 150th birthday. And those of us in the cattle business were trying to think of a way to mark that occasion. And what we came up with was, well, let's drive some cattle. And somehow it got bigger and bigger and bigger. And what we wound up doing is we drove 1,000 head of cattle, almost 100 miles, starting down to, close to Yeehaw Junction, north, and wound up at the big famous rodeo arenas in Kissimmee. And we had about 600 people total, about 500 horses, and it was truly the experience of a lifetime. You know, having to camp primitive, we wanted to make it, you know, as close to the old way as we could, so there's no campers, there's no trailers. Every person was allowed to bring 65 pounds of stuff, and that's what we would tote for them from camp to camp, and that would include their tent, their bedroll, you know, their shaving kit and change of clothes, whatever they thought they would need during those 7 days. And it was a marvelous experience, a marvelous educational experience, the largest single event of the sesquicentennial celebration, and we were lucky enough to get some wonderful sponsors and participants, most markedly the Department of Agriculture in Florida and the Seminole Tribe. When we were getting started on that, I noticed that, you know, here's Florida celebrating their 150th birthday, and as far as I knew, nobody had asked the Seminole Tribe of Florida if they wanted to participate. So they had played such an essential role in preserving the cattle in the late 16 and early 1700s, it was mostly left in their hands. So we went to them and we asked them if they wanted to come play, and they did big time. We had a marvelous partnership, Chief Billy, Chairman Billy, James Billy, and the council and the board both supported us wholeheartedly, and it was a wonderful exchange of culture as well. Each night along the drive, we would have a reenactment from some point in Florida's history. So first night, we had a Timucuan Indian village set up. Second night would be Spanish colonial. Third night was Civil War. Fourth night was Seminole, strictly Seminole. Next night would be 1880s cow camps. You know, we tried to make it as educational as possible as well as entertaining.
Wow, that sounds like quite an extravaganza, and I'm sure the organizing was massive and took a long time. So like 1,000 cattle and 500 horses. I mean, this is a giant undertaking. It's like a moon mission or something. So I'm glad that the Seminoles participated happily, because that was a great idea on your part to bring them in. And I can see they might have had mixed emotions, right, given the history of things. But I'm glad that they were happy to pitch in and be part of that historical memorialization of the history of Florida. So you mentioned that the cattle were left in their hands for a long time. And I think you mean they were left there by the Spaniards, who were there a few hundred years before, right? So what breeds of cattle out of the 1,000 cattle that went? That's a huge herd. Were there like one breed or several breeds? And, you know, what kinds of cattle were along?
Well, you know, what we're proudest of here in Florida as cattle producers is this is where the cattle industry began in the United States. The first cattle, the first horses to ever step foot in what became the continental United States, landed in Port Charlotte Harbor in the year 1521. Oral tradition has it that from that moment to this, there have been cattle in Florida. They were basically Spanish Andalusian cattle and horses, and they've come to be known now as cracker cattle and cracker horses. We almost bred them out of existence, trying to get a little more size, trying to get a little more meat on them, that sort of thing. But the Department of Agriculture and my father and some heritage breeders realized in the late 60s, early 70s, that we were about to lose the cattle that made Florida. And the attributes that they had that made them different from all the other breeds of cattle, which is the ability to forage unbelievably. You can turn a cracker cow loose on a parking lot and she'll live and have a baby every year. And they have a natural resistance to parasites, which is a big plus when you're in a humid state like Florida here.
Sure.
And so they're really, you know, you went from 1521 till the late 1800s, early 1900s, with they would try to bring in English breeds to crossbreed and that sort of thing, and it just wouldn't work. The climate and the conditions would kill them.
Yeah.
But when veterinary practices improved, mosquito control and improved grassland and fencing, slowly it came around to where you could, and it started with the Brahma breed. They crossed and they could handle the hot weather pretty good. And then it, you know, it slowly would bring in different Hereford, Angus, some other different breeds as the conditions weren't so dire. But, you know, the genetics of a cow that can have a resistance to parasites and to other maladies would be a horrible thing to lose from the gene pool. So I think we were classified as the number two or three most endangered domestic species in America. There were just a few hundred spread around, but we were able to find them, breed them back, DNA test them to make sure they were pure. And now we have probably 6,000 head of cracker cattle. You can take these cows and instead of turning them loose on nice improved pastures, you can just turn them loose in the piney woods and they'll strip the bark off the trees if they have to or eat palmetto bushes, and they'll survive and thrive, not just survive.
So it sounds like the cracker cattle are as tough as the crackers themselves were, or more so. But back on the drive itself, in the first one in 95, how many days did it take to go, I think you said 100 miles?
Yeah, it was close to 100 miles. We started on Monday morning, same as we're going to do this upcoming drive. We started on Monday morning, and we ended on Saturday afternoon. So 6 days on the trail. Had a wonderful experience riding through primarily large old Florida ranches. A little bit of state-owned property, not much. We camped one night on Three Lakes Wildlife Preserve. And after that, it was pretty much on some of the big ranches owned by the big cow families up and down the Kissimmee River there, the Bronsons and the Overstreets and the Whaleys.
So that was 95, but as we all know, Florida changes rapidly, even in bad times, but certainly in good economic times. People flood in and subdivisions are built where there used to be ranch land and even where there used to be swamp land. So I'm glad that in 95, most of the drive was through wild country. In 2006, was it the same kind of thing, or was it harder to find contiguous continuous stretches of wild country to go through by 10 years or 11 years later?
We had to, in 06, we basically went the same route, except in 95 we went from south to north to wind up in Kissimmee at the rodeo arena. In 2006, we had to start below Kissimmee because it had developed so much there's no way on earth you could have driven 10 cows, much less 1,000, through the new, apartments and subdivisions and that sort of thing. So we started 10 or 12 miles south of St. Cloud on the Whaley Ranch, and then we zigzagged our way south to Keenansville, and we covered, about 50 miles. We'll do about the same, probably a little more like 70 this year, because we're going to meander more. But we're still primarily going across the big ranches, pretty wild country, and it's beautiful. On each of those trips, I've never seen so many eagles.
Wow.
Just beautiful bald eagles, and flora and fauna is just amazing.
Sure. What an experience. Well, most of the participants are tourists, I'm sure, in a sense. Let's call them tourists. I don't know what we refer to them as, participants or something maybe, but I'm sure our listeners are wondering, out of, 500 or 600 people or hundreds of people, how many are involved in the actual cattle drive? I know there are also expert cow hunters along. How many of them are there?
Well, we'd have about 10. They'd be full-time jobs to take care of the cattle. We break participants up into what we call wagon circles. And each wagon circle gets to go forward and drive the cattle for one day. That's the way it was in the two previous drives. That's the way it'll be on this one as well.
Okay.
So everybody that participates and wants to will be able to actually drive cattle for at least a day. It's worked out real well, because we got people that really know what they're doing and keep folks that don't know what they're doing out of trouble. But primarily the people that are on the ride are at least horse people.
Yeah.
They are used to riding. They're used to some of them are extraordinarily accomplished horsemen and horsewomen. And it's about an even split, guys and gals.
How is it?
And a lot of children. We have a lot of kids. We request that they keep a journal of what happens and the history they're exposed to and whatnot, and turn that back in when they return back to their classes. It's worked real well in the past, and everybody seems to, most everybody lived through it. We haven't had any, we haven't had to mount any crosses along the trail thus far.
Well, I have to laugh thinking about the cowboys, the cow hunters, who's 10 of them driving several hundred cattle, which is already a job in itself, but I think they're also probably to some extent driving the participants, because they've got to deal with people who've never done this before, and so they're kind of training them on the fly while they're also trying to do the job of keeping the cattle moving in the right direction, or at least moving. So is that pretty stressful and hard work for them? We try to make sure that we
bring our guys that not only have stockman skills, but have people skills. They got to be able to tell them no nicely, and keep everybody safe. What we discovered on the first ride was that a lot of horses have never seen cattle, and therefore scared of them.
Yeah.
But B, and much more dramatically, they've never seen wagons, and they are scared to death of a wagon.
Wow.
On that first day. They get over it, but that's what caused several wrecks when we first got started, and it never even dawned on us that would be a problem year one.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, horses will spook at a plastic grocery bag blowing by or anything, really. So you got hundreds of horses that in many cases aren't used to being around so many other people or horses, and so is there a fair amount of bucking and kicking and biting that goes on, at least the first day? I mean, is there some kind of chaos among the horses?
Chaos is an understatement, yeah. it can be quite the madhouse. Now, we've learned as we've gone, so we'll take an extra day, and when people are gathering on Saturday, we'll have wagons driving around through all the, everything that's going on, so they'll be exposed and a little bit at a time instead of just hitting it the first day.
When you say wagons, what kind of wagons are we talking about? Like Conestoga wagons or what?
A little bit of, in the past, it's been just a little bit of everything. From little two-wheeled carts to big Conestoga-type wagons. Not true Conestogas, but big old freight wagons with the tops on them and whatnot. Like a chuck wagon would look like. It's been a very, very colorful and interesting experience. The Teamsters add a lot to the program. I mean, it's neat to see them coming through the pines or coming down a slough. It makes you picture how it might have been.
Yeah, I can imagine. You're listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis, and we're talking with Doyle Connor Jr. in Florida, who is the trail boss of something called the Great Florida Cattle Drive. There have been two of them before, one in 1995 and one in 2006, and there's another one coming up in early 2016. So, Doyle, what's the experience like for the participants who are, as you said, somewhat better than greenhorns, but still maybe they're experienced horse people, but they ride around in nice tame trails where they live? Is it really roughing it? I mean, do they sleep on the ground, and what do they eat? I mean, just kind of briefly, what are some of those practical details like of living on the drive?
Well, we supply all the food for humans, horses, and cows. And so we will have a big tent, and we will have it catered, and it'll be good groceries. But you can't, like I said, you have 65 pounds of stuff, so that can include your tent and your bedroll and a cot or whatever you have that is less than 65 pounds. And we'll carry it from one camp to the next. Then you have to set it up, break it down the next morning, put it in the trailer, and it'll go on to where you're going to wind up that evening. With quality gear, you don't have to be uncomfortable.
How about access to water for both people and horses?
We make all of that available. We have the Forestry Service and the local fire department will bring huge tanks out and fill up emergency stock tanks for all the horses. And then we have potable water and a little bit of washing water and something to splash in your face. At all stops, so nobody's going to do without. Now, they're going to do without showers. They're going to do without a bubble bath.
If they want to carry wine in their 65 pounds, that's up to them, I guess, or beer.
Yep,
or whatever.
Absolutely.
So when you talk about food and water, then you kind of have to talk about bathroom breaks. Do you have porta-potties, or what do you bring along for that?
We do it all the camps, and we do it where we stop for lunch. And then if you're out on the trail, it's just, you know, boys on the right, girls on the left.
Okay, that's what I was wondering.
That's the way it has to be.
Interesting. And also with all these horses going along, I imagine you can finally see the evidence of their passage from satellites in space by the time they're all done. That's a mess.
It's not. After two rains, you don't even know we've been there. That's what... We had a little bit of a hard time negotiating to go through the state-owned property the first time, but we took such good care of it, and that after we'd passed, they said after two rains, you couldn't even tell we'd been there.
Yeah, that's good. Nature heals itself.
It does indeed.
So there must have been some extreme occurrences. We've alluded to a couple of them indirectly, but, you know, things both good and bad. So thinking back about both of the previous drives, Doyle, what were some of the really good things that you recall happening?
Well, I can't tell you how many people from the first day on the first drive to yesterday that will call me and say, you know, I went on that first cattle drive, and it was truly the experience of a lifetime. I've never had more fun. I've never met more interesting and likable and personable people. I've never learned more about Florida history. And every person that went on any of those drives, there's no way they can get together anywhere, anytime without talking about it. It's on the top of the list. It's just a feeling riding through those hammocks and those crossing those creeks and skirting those swamps. It's just a feeling that crawls all over you and says, now I know a little bit about the way it was. I know what my ancestors went through. I know a little bit about what it took to make a living out here. I'm not intimate, I'm not extraordinarily knowledgeable, but I know a little more and I have a better feeling, a better grasp of it. Whether they were 12 years old or up to 82, everybody that went just had a grand time.
I bet. When I was a kid, a teenager in Florida and used to hunt, and I would be out there with two or three guys my age and sometimes over Christmas vacation or whatever, just being in those hammocks all day and overnight was just like you're describing. It's pretty magical, and you just get immersed in nature where you just realize you're a little tiny part of it, and things just going on around you like they've gone on for a million years. It's really something else. But, well, how about the other side of the coin? Were there occurrences that scared you to death? Has anybody gotten hurt out on the trail, things like that?
Well, as I referenced earlier, that first day when horses were just seeing wagons for the first time and turning around and just running away, the first 3 hours of the first cattle drive, we had a horse, a good-looking old fat pony, just die. We had a man get kicked, broke his jaw.
Ow.
He had to go to the hospital. We had a young lady with asthma attack. She had to go to the hospital. Late that day, we had a man had a heart attack. But we have all the medical personnel that you can imagine, and the ambulances on call and on hand, up to and including helicopter.
Yeah.
And every one of those people were back on the drive before we finished.
Really?
The first year. And it was only the first day. When all the horses were getting used to each other and used to the excitement and used to the wagons and used to the cattle, and the horses were making mistakes and people were getting excited, I told the guys on the radio with me, I said, this is going to truly look like, from here to Kissimmee, is going to truly look like the Santa Fe Trail. There are going to be crosses all along the way.
Blood.
But after that first day, everybody fell down into a rhythm and everything started cranking. And then in the second year, we made sure that, you know, the horses were exposed to wagons and the horses were exposed to cows and whips and whatnot. And we didn't have near the trauma that we did on the first drive.
Yeah, that's good.
I'm happy to say.
Do you cross any fairly big bodies of water where horses are not used to crossing a knee-deep river? Or is that kind of thing going on?
And more than knee-deep in spots, yeah. Mm. We had cattle and horses. We learned the first year the cattle and horses weren't all that, you know, we can make them do. But getting a wagon across a creek crossing might be something completely different. We had a bridge that the cows and horses, you know, went over the creek. But the wagons had to go across the bridge, and it wasn't safe. We didn't realize till later. So what we did, you know, cracker ingenuity, we literally took a wagon apart and made it paneled the bridge with that wagon, let everybody get across, pull the parts of the wagon to the other side, and then put it back together, and off we went. It was amazing that we had some people with that kind of know-how.
Wow.
You know, right there with us.
Country boy can survive, huh? Well, that's
indeed.
It's kind of like
it worked well.
We've used the term crackers a few times, and I think that cracker has become, in the general parlance, a pejorative term, but it wasn't back then, and in parts of Florida it still is not. So how did the old Florida crackers get their name?
Well, oral tradition has that if you wanted to picture a Florida cow hunter, the best evidence I could give you is the Man from Snowy River, the old movie, The Man from Snowy River, that Australian, flat hat, flat saddle, brogan shoes, and uses a whip instead of a rope, and that's what a Florida cracker cow hunter looks like.
That's the image.
Yeah. So when the whip is used to drive cattle, if you want him to move to the left, you'll pop the whip off his right, off his right side, and he'll move away from that sound and away from you. you very seldom, if ever, would actually hit an animal with the whip. And when the whip breaks the sound barrier, mm-hmm. it makes this the loud, loud crack that we're used to.
There you go.
And so many people, like driving cattle from Florida up into Georgia and up into railroad depots and whatnot, would hear those whips coming and say, you know, here comes them Florida crackers. And it's the cracker comes from the sound of the mm-hmm. of the whips.
That's it. That's what I've always heard. Well, in case we've got people out there who are interested in participating in this wild and crazy adventure, which is the adventure of a lifetime, especially if you're interested in horses and in old Florida history, and it may not happen again, right? If it happens every 10 years, I mean, Florida's being eaten up by subdivisions and so on. And
I'm going to be 60 during this one, and I'm pretty sure it's my last one. We tried to get some youngsters, younger folks interested in it, and they have been. Right now, we're doing it about every 10 years.
So if it is the last one, it may be, a lot of people might want to participate. So what does it cost to participate to start with?
$600 is what you pay, and that pays for everything you and your horse eat.
Okay.
And all the amenities that we make available. And we have our website where you can take a look and see if it looks like something that'll suit you. And we hope you will, because it'll be an amazing experience.
And the website is www.greatfloridacattledrive16.org. So it's greatfloridacattledrive16.org. And you can sign up and get ready and get down there and participate. So, boy, this is really something else. I know that Florida is a big beef-producing state. We just have a minute or so left, but just briefly, where does it stand in terms of the beef-producing states in the country?
We're the nursery. The babies come from Florida. We're about the 10th top state in beef production. We do about $800 million worth of calves sold every year and $400 million worth of dairy cows on top of almost $1 billion worth of beef cows.
Hmm.
It's a big, big business still, but it's a very historic and traditional livelihood. That's why we exist here and doing what we're doing.
Yeah, so Florida isn't all just beaches and Disney World. It's still real Florida in the middle of Florida and the north part of Florida in particular. But do you think that old Florida, Doyle, will continue to hang on for much longer?
Well, the cracker's a hard animal to kill, just like the Florida panther. We will survive.
Right.
And as long as somebody will let me, I'll preach the gospel of Florida whenever and wherever. So we're not going to die out. We just may get weaned off a little bit.
Well, it's a great event, a very interesting and unique thing we've been talking about, really. And I use that word very seldom because it means the only, and I think it is the only thing, the Great Florida Cattle Drive, the only thing going on like that in the whole country. Again, the website is www.greatfloridacattledrive16.org. Doyle Connor, I want to thank you so much for being on with us on American Variety and describing this big event.
Well, Court, it's been a pleasure. Like I say, we always enjoy spreading the gospel of Florida.
Good luck to you in the drive in January.
Thank you, sir. I'm sure we'll need it.
And thanks to everyone for listening. I hope you'll tune in again next week, same time, same place, for more American Variety Radio.